Chapter 76. You cannot miss a thing you do not remember. Perhaps Vincent was right. Perhaps he was being kind. Vincent's new device, his new toy for the forgetting, had several disadvantages. I believe he hadn't had a chance to test it properly, for, at its application, it killed me stone dead. My name is Harry August, born New Year's Day 1919, Berwick-upon-Tweed Station, and I remembered everything. Charity came to me when I was 6 years old, discreetly this time, quietly, slipping into my life sideways through the Hunes, ready to debrief me, question me about my time with Vincent. No glamour, no shouting, no wealth, no Cronus Club. It took her 6 months to convince the Hunes to let her adopt me, and as soon as I was out of the house, I was whisked away to Leeds, where a new Mr. and Mrs. August were waiting to raise me in exchange for a heavy donation of cash and a sense of good deeds and charitable works. The paperwork was in place, the groundwork accomplished. Vincent knew where to find me now, if he wanted to look. Charity said, "You know, Harry, you really don't have to do this. There are other ways." "Of course there are other ways. Let's find Vincent again. Let's strap him down and hack off his feet, his hands, cut out his eyes, slice open his nose, carve our signatures in his skin. Let's make him swallow hot tar. Let's break every bone in his feet, one at a time, until he dies, having told us nothing. Nothing at all. Vincent Rankis is not Victor Hernis. He knows perfectly well what he is doing, and he will die defending it. So much for torture."
"What if we make him forget?"
Akinlaye, a child, stood by the seashore, face furrowed with hundreds of years of concern. How quickly the centuries had caught up with her, how heavy they weighed. Was it a consequence of being reborn so close to the attack on the Cronus Club? Had she been forced by these events to take responsibility? Or maybe we were simply the sum of our memories, and this new Akinlaye was the sum of hers. "I'm a mnemonic." I had never spoken these words out loud. I remember everything. Simply everything. Twice Vincent has tried the forgetting on me, and twice he has failed. He is also a mnemonic. It will not work on him. Or worse, far worse. Like me, he will feign having forgotten and destroy us. The Cronus Club in my 15th life was not the club of my first 800 or so years. Its members were coming back, those who had survived Virginia's purges. Those who had been forced to forget were now on their third lives, and the messages were slowly trickling back through the generations. The club of the 20th century is back, and we have dire warnings for all. Messages were received in carved stone from the 1800s, inquiring after us, asking what had happened to the club to cause the 20th century suddenly to go so quiet. The messages from the future were darker, passed down from child to pensioner, whispered back from the 21st century. "In our last lives," the voices said, "the world was not the world we knew. Technology had changed, time had changed, and many of us simply were not born. We haven't heard from the 22nd century at all. We have no idea what happened to them. Please leave your answers in stone." So the effect of our calamity rippled forward, spreading its wave through time. I dared not give an answer to the future clubs, not even a time capsule sealed for 500 years' time. The risk of it being discovered by Vincent in this time, of him learning how close we were to pursuing and punishing him, was too great. I would not risk the safety of everything I had sought simply out of compassion for a century I had not seen. My contact with the club was therefore strictly limited. In the early years, it was with Akinlaye alone. She alone did I trust with the secret of what I was doing. In later years, Charity too was admitted to the fold. Charity's role was crucial, for she generated the paperwork relating to my fictional life that I needed. Documents which confirmed the story I had told Vincent in my previous life, of being an orphan, of Mr. and Mrs. August in Leeds, everything which might be needed to prove to Vincent that I was who I claimed to be. Now, my memory wiped again, I had to live the life of an ordinary linear boy, become my cover story. And so I went to school every day in Leeds, and did my best not to embarrass anyone or myself, performing with the aim of achieving an average B-plus grade until the age of 17, when I was resolved to give myself some chance of going to university and studying something I hadn't studied before. Law, perhaps. I could see myself becoming lost very easily in the dry but thick volumes of wisdom that subject contained. As it turned out, obtaining B-plus came more naturally than I had expected. Questions designed for a 14-year-old brain baffled me in my old age. Asked to write an essay on the Spanish Armada, I presented 6,000 words charting its causes, course, and consequences. I had tried very hard to stop myself losing nearly 3,000 words from the overall bulk before submission. But the more I looked at the question, the more I could not conceive what the teacher desired. A blow-by-blow account of events? It seemed the most obvious, and so I tried to give it, but found myself utterly unable to avoid writing why Philip II chose to link up with the Duke of Parma, or why the English fleet sent fireships into the Armada of Calais. The eventual grade for my essay was a grudging A-, and a note in the margin requesting that I stick to the matter at hand. I chose, from that point on, to disregard my teacher entirely, and occupied my brain in his class by inventing first a shorthand derived from Sanskrit, then a longhand derived from Korean, designed to ensure the minimum motion of the pen between each letter, and the most logical calligraphical unity between letters of certain types. When I was finally caught doing this, I was dismissed as the world's most idle doodler, given 3 lashes on the hand with a ruler, and made to sit at the back of the class. 2 boys, a would-be alpha of the pack, supported by an omega too slow to realize that the top dog needed his minion's adoration to assure himself of his superiority, attempted playground bullying after that incident. My name not rhyming with anything particularly obscene that their young minds could come up with, they settled instead for a little pushing, a little shoving, a little shouting, and when finally bored with their discourse, I turned round, looked them in the eye, and politely informed them that I would rip the ears off the next one who laid a finger on me, the omega burst out crying, and I once again received 3 smacks of the ruler to my left hand, and also detention. To spite my teacher, my next week's project was learning how to write ambidextrously, creating no end of confusion as to which of my hands was the one that could be most conveniently smashed about with a stick while leaving me best able to do my homework. My teacher finally realized that I was in fact able to write with either hand, just as I was beginning to step up the quality of schoolwork in expectation of the slog through to university when... "Are you Harry?" A child's voice, young, interested, unbroken. I was 16. The boy looked about 9. He was wearing a grey cap, grey jacket, white shirt, navy blue striped tie and white socks, which he'd pulled up almost to his pink kneecaps. He held a satchel over one shoulder and a bag of hard sweets stuck together on the paper in his other hand. Vincent Rankis's face still had a lot of growing out to do, and it was immediately apparent that the years between 10 and 18 were not necessarily going to be kind in this regard. The already thin hair sticking down from beneath his cap foretold its scarcity in later life, but his eyes glistened with the old familiar intelligence. I stared at this child, hundreds, maybe thousands of years old, and remembered that I was just 16, an orphaned teenager from Leeds trying to be cool. "Yeah," I replied in my best local accent. "What is it to you?" "My dad sent me to find you," he replied firmly. "You dropped this." He handed me, very carefully, a blue paper notebook. It was cheap and a little tatty, and bore inside some unfortunate child's French homework, pages of the stuff declaring, "Je m'appelle, je suis, je voudrais," running down neat, rulered margins. I flicked through, then looked up to say, "This isn't..." But the boy was gone.